Prime Matters presents this series on prayer and discernment with Monsignor Thomas Richter and Father Dominic Bauch, chaplain of the University of Mary. PrimeMatters.com is a groundbreaking project of educational outreach of the University of Mary, awakening the Catholic imaginative vision. Episode 5, How God Speaks, Part 2.
Good. So one thing that comes up, and it's kind of a difficult question, you mentioned grandma, you know, but grandma doesn't usually have too huge of an influence on people's lives, but things like expectations placed on them by their parents especially. And this is kind of a tough thing to talk about because parents, obviously, is a whole commandment saying that we should honor our fathers and mothers. When we're children, we're also obliged to obey them. And what I encounter with college students a lot of times is also this stress based on expectations placed on me by my parents. And so how do you take, like, because clearly, you know, we always presume good intentions anyway, but, you know, we assume parents would have good intentions for their children, right? But to separate myself from the pressure placed on me by a voice, which would probably be, you know, first or second level of the heart, and then how do I separate that out in my head between it could be parents, it could be society, whatever, these expectations that I place on myself that I need to, you know, hold that in front of the face of Christ and see, okay, how does this reveal himself to me and how is this an obstacle seeing that face?
My first response, Father, would be, in most cases, whatever I do, I shouldn't do alone. So when a person is growing, when a docile child, is becoming a young, independent adult, it would be great if that college person could say, Mom and Dad say this, I'm starting to wonder about that, what do you think? So to have a chaplain, to have some sort of advisor, mature person, to help a person work through that without feeling like they're dishonoring their mom and their dad. So that would be my first thing, that we don't live in spiritual ivory towers figuring all this out alone, just me and Jesus. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I do think, right, when it's all said and done, these wonderments they have in their mind have to somehow be brought in precisely to their prayer, their lively, real, lived prayer with Jesus, because he's real. He's real. He's really active. He really relates to them. They really can bring things and open things up to him. And then in doing that, right, paying attention without some real clinical, awful, mechanical sort of way. Yeah. Although learning how to do anything in the beginning is a bit clumsy, whether that's playing the piano or golf. And so what is required is that a person starts to become aware of the most basic experience of God, which St. Ignatius of Loyola describes as spiritual consolation. So, if the Lord is moving a person in a direction other than what they thought was right with mom and dad, and now the most basic language of God for Ignatius is what he calls spiritual consolation, namely, the experience of being consoled on the third level. So thoughts, feelings, and desires on the third level of the heart that console me in regards to relationship with God. What would be spiritual consolation? I go to Mass and I leave filled with just a quiet, nothing dramatic, but wow, is God good to me? You take care of me. The thing I was all worried about that I was trying to, I entrusted to you, and now there's a basic sort of experience, huh? So consolation is with the sun, con sole, with light. So any heartfelt experience of warmth, of lightness, of attraction, of energy on the third level in regards to my relationship with God. This is the language of God to the human heart. So now to bring your question into that, namely when I'm in this place, what in the midst of this place, what am I sensing in regards to that question? That, I think, is key for a young person to answer that question. The language of the bad spirit, the most common basic native language of the bad spirit, according to Ignatius, is what is called spiritual desolation. I missed a key word for consolation. For me, if you'd ask someone, Senior Richter, what is spiritual consolation? You have one word, encouragement. Gives life to the heart.
Yeah.
So when I'm spiritually consoled, I'm attracted to say Mass. I'm attracted to pray.
Yeah.
I have great confidence in God and His providence and care. Spiritual desolation is the opposite. Heaviness, confusion, darkness, discouragement, which means taking the disheartening all around one's relationship with God.
Yeah.
And the faith in everything true from that. So, obviously the elder son is filled with desolation, discouragement, heaviness, aloneness, no warmth, separation from the Father. And if we apply that to relationship with God, he would choose not to believe it. He would choose to resist it. He would choose not to dwell on it, etc. This is the fundamental working. So in this framework, Father, you have to now ask these questions. And as you can see, right, I can see these gears going on in your head. Well, then, Monsignor, really the big issue is how do we help young people to start experiencing and naming spiritual consolation where they can have some confidence that this is what's happening. And this is to name spiritual desolation, that this is what's happening. Because in spiritual desolation, the only thing you're supposed to do is resist it.
Right.
That's not a time to ask whether I should buy this house or not, whether I should change majors or not,
yeah.
And certainly not whether I should, my vocation.
Yeah.
And so it comes down again to becoming aware more and more in this space where what I am experiencing in my thoughts, feelings, and desires is from God, and when it isn't. Is that too systematic?
No, and I think, you know, I think when you ever have like something systematic, because it's good to have systematic so we can have common language that we talk about. But you know, it strikes me as like a story which reflects this of what you're saying. This is the story of St. Francis of Assisi. You know, so he's pursuing the life of the world. He wants to be a successful, you know, young man, mm-hmm. which means military glory. Right, he gets captured, so he's experienced maybe level one and two of the heart success, and then level one and two of the heart failure.
Interesting.
And in that moment, you know, is when he has in his cell, in prison, has no option except to confront like
perfect
a major life choice, and so to make the decision that he did to respond to the call of Christ, to you know rebuild his church, against the wishes of his father, that would have been fundamentally. He's restoring that relationship with Jesus and really investing into that, and then all things are seen in its light, mm-hmm. and he's the model for us of that great joy that comes from all of that, mm-hmm. through objectively very difficult circumstances, right?
Huge.
A public falling out with your,
you got it.
Your father, for instance.
Yes. So the point being, right, the bad spirit, right, are not just fallen angels.
Right.
But another person who speaks from a place outside of faith. And now that voice itself can be an agent, just as a person whose heart is close to God can speak to me, yeah. and in that, God is speaking to me. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the bad spirit, that would include, he would mean that in inclusive terms, the world, the flesh, and fallen spirits. Yeah. The good spirit is the Holy Spirit, angels, people who are close to God speaking from right. there, and my own good human nature.
Sure.
But so now Francis had to have such clarity around the voice of God as to be able to stand up to his strong father and say, what you are desiring for me is against God's desires for me, and so I receive him, follow him, and reject this. Does that take great strength? Yeah. And you don't start that by asking a question in a class, so how do I know what to do? God had to let him encounter him a ton, right? It's like Paul, yeah. 3 years. St. Ignatius in the cave for how many years? St. Benedict, they meet God, and then they gotta come to learn this language more.
Right.
But at the same time, that we let it be human.
Yeah.
Right? So when I think of a person that is maybe suffering, and in me is an attraction to give them a call, a thought to call them, and I have an attraction, etc., to do that, I need to take very seriously and consider that was the inspiration of God saying what he wants of me.
Right.
So to make sure that this is incarnational as well. Now, we have the beautiful framework of the teachings of the church, the commandments, etc. So, right, God isn't going to warm my heart and ask me to hijack a plane.
Right, exactly.
Because the foundation of all discernment, God can't speak to me personally in a way that it contradicts how he speaks to me through the church.
Right.
Through the sacred scriptures, through the magisterium, through sacred tradition. And so God can't contradict God. So the first level of discernment is, did that violate what God has revealed through the church?
Right.
Well, then I don't need to get into thoughts, feelings, desires around that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that is the real thing, is helping young people name consolation yeah. on the third level. If I was to give you a job description, Father, on this campus,
yeah.
that would be one of them. What is your job? To help students name consolation on the third level of the heart. And not to confuse second with third.
Sure.
Because the enemy can lead a lot of people to a lot of sin by consolation
yeah.
on these other levels.
And one thing I see too is not just sin, but also like a lack of generosity
yes.
or inward focus.
Totally.
And that's so funny, because that's where all the anxiety comes from, because you're clinging on to things that are
yep.
fundamentally moving. Yeah, so there are a lot of students who seek spiritual direction, and I give them the same speech that you did.
Good.
Of what it is, of what is a prerequisite for receiving spiritual direction. But I have each one meet with me if they ask me,
great.
Can I get a spiritual director? I make sure I sit down with them, and I don't have the possibility to be a spiritual director for all of them, and we have other good spiritual directors. So what I do is I give them that, and they evaluate where they're at, and then I give them a copy. It's the pamphlet in your series by Father Paul Hazing, Teaching Young Disciples to Pray, and he goes through relational prayer. And it's a great it's a great resource for them to get a foot in the door.
That's good to know.
So even if they're not at that point, to have that kind of, okay, here's, you want spiritual direction, this is what spiritual direction is, and this is where you need to be. But I think your point is exactly right. Even if it is counseling, which I refer a lot of people to, you know, professional counseling for various reasons, or even a life coach, like, all those things are positive things. That to say, I'm going to come out of myself to listen to another human being help me to live my life better. We all do it all the time, mm-hmm. as priests. Yep. Any counselor goes to a counselor. You know, like we all have this. Even if we're really good at seeing other, you know, other people's lives and can guide them, we all have to go reach out of ourselves.
That's right.
And I think sometimes that's lost today of discerning, seeing which voices in my life are ones that are helpful to me, and which voices in my life are the ones that are not helpful to me.
That's right.
Because sometimes people are in positions of influence, but they're not good voices. Yeah. And sometimes we marginalize people who are telling us important, good things about ourselves, helpful things, and we say, I don't want to listen to that because it doesn't conform to what I want for my life.
Yes.
So just to say, like, it's important to go seek that help, mm-hmm. that incarnational reality that helps me see myself. Because fundamentally, that's what we're doing with God. I always tell people, you know, in the confessional that are having a really hard time, to go say this prayer, Jesus, help me see me the way that you see me, right? We always need to be taking ourselves out of ourselves. And the best place to do that is with God, to see what does God think about me? And that's where you can start addressing those lies on the third order.
You got it.
He thinks you're a failure.
Yes.
You're fat, you know, yeah. And he hates you. Yeah. Well, if that's what you think, then show me in the Bible where, like, that's, or, you know, the tradition of the church where that's the voice of God.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not. So why am I having this disconnect in my life? And a spiritual director, after you've prayed about it, can help reveal that to you.
That's incredibly helpful. Thank you for bringing that up. It really makes things touch down. The rubber hits the road, right? Really strong. That question, do you think that comes from God? It's a, or even better, do you think that's how God would speak to Jesus? that's what the Father would say to Jesus or to Joseph or whoever. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how people, when they're outside of themselves,
yeah.
and it's about the reference point is somebody else, and my ego isn't all wrapped up
right.
around it, that, well, no. And then my next question is, so why do you listen to it?
Yeah.
The fundamental issue, I think, if one was to push me to, what is, like, the one thing you really need to focus on, especially with the young, is rejecting stuff that doesn't come from God.
Yeah.
We are so filled with self-loathing,
yes.
self-hate, self-condemnation, self-rejection, which then gets us into this non-relational, self-absorbed thinking about mm-hmm. and self, just concerned about myself and overthinking everything. Just get yeah. out of that.
And I need, in a false framework, to, because we all have that fundamental neediness, right? With relationship, mm-hmm. we're persons in need, right? We
yes.
We're not self-sufficient. We can't just say I'm enough, right? We need ultimately God, obviously, but to say no, I need all these other things in addition to God, and then that's what fills my relationship with God is these, what should be. But then it's my achievements or my self-image. And then we experience failure at those. So we set benchmarks of what it means to have dignity and self-worth that are not in God. We achieve them and realize that that's not what fulfilled me in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we don't achieve them and then we think, man, I'm a total failure. I can never be someone who's worthwhile. That's when you get into serious trouble
yes.
with our self-image.
Yes.
As opposed to saying, how do I... as a member of the body of Christ through my baptism, to whom God the Father says to his only begotten Son, you are my beloved Son, you are well pleased, right? That all of us are sons and daughters insofar as we're, you know, baptized into that person of Christ and therefore are pleasing to God.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us received baptism as a little baby, right? And so at that point, you're pleasing to God.
Sure.
You haven't got a PhD, you know, you're not doing much besides going to the bathroom, you know? That's right. But at that point, you are pleasing and a child of God, right? And as adults, then all of a sudden, we lay on so many layers onto that. We complicate it so much to say, oh, I need to earn it now. When did God say that?
Mm-hmm. Right. I want to give myself my own identity. I want to make a name for myself, right? My identity doesn't come from how God sees me or what God has done, what God has declared, what God has decided, or how God sees me, as you say, but rather I've decided I am according to my criteria. And it usually comes down to one of the four false gods, right? Wealth, power,
honor,
and pleasure. When I feel good, I'm good.
When others tell me I'm good, I'm good.
Yep. When others think I'm good, I'm good. The false god of honor, right? Power. When things go my way, I'm good. Wealth, what I have, and when I have what I want to have, I'm good. And so these false identities being spoken into me, I start to interiorize if I'm not careful. So it's a daily thing, but it is amazing how one can get freed from stuff with someone simply holding up that question, do you think that comes from God? And it starts to free the person from receiving from this other place that only makes me now have less confidence in God, a worse image and vision of God, and more like the elder son, etc.
Right. And then we hide like Adam does.
Yeah.
Hide from God. He's a threat.
Yes. Yeah. Outside of that, Father Dominic, with the dynamics of the spiritual movements and how the Lord speaks, I think those would be the key thing. The other major thing, but I think for the most people, for the most part, people who come to you, right, are wanting and are moving toward God.
Yeah.
Right? They're trying. The first rule of Ignatius, right, is those who are moving away from God, and that could be in a certain area of our life.
Sure.
So, but for those, basically, what I say to the kids, if one says, okay, everything, but this part of my life is out of bounds for you, God, then in this place that's moving away from God, the experience of the two spirits is opposite. And he says, for a person moving away from God, and I use the analogy, for a child who's about to drink bleach, how does a parent respond, right? So for a person moving away from God, the experience of God isn't spiritual consolation, but he acts in the conscience around rational judgment in a biting, uncomfortable way. Mm-hmm. So what is God like for you and me where we are moving away from him, where we're being tempted to lie, let's say, or being tempted to gossip, and we're aware of that, but we've made a decision now in our will, I'm going to do what I want. So when we're moving away from God, the experience of God, his voice is in my conscience around right judgment, saying, don't do it. Mm-hmm. You're going to regret it. Stop. It's going to be bad. It's not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
This is what God is like for a person moving away from God. Now, unfortunately, this is a whole nother episode one could talk about. that's the only way God can communicate with the person who's drinking bleach. God can't console him.
Right.
A mother can't console a child who is taking in drugs and destroying himself without contributing to his self-destruction. The bad spirit in that case, Ignatius says, works in the imagination. So God works in the conscience around right judgment, moral judgment. The bad spirit in the person moving away from God acts in the imagination around apparent pleasures. This will make you happy. This will give you what you're looking for, etc., etc. A false consolation, a false peace around the imagination, which then lures and tries to attract. And one really knows they have followed the wrong voice, at least through trial and error, by there's always a hangover when one follows the enemy, at least in the beginning. Right, so when one follows this apparent but false pleasure, and one lies, the enemy never delivers the goods. The Lord does. Even when it's biting, if I consent to him, my heart is grateful. And I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. The other one, when one consents, there's a hangover effect and says, what the heck? Right, a person who struggles with anger and impatience. Okay, this one last time I'm gonna put the hammer down and my world is gonna be, it's all gonna come to, and then you follow that and you say, what the heck am I doing? Mm-hmm. We would say all of this isn't just on a first or second level, humanity thing, emotional thing, psychological thing, but for a believer who is really trying to be faithful, that this is involving other beings more powerful than me, and I'm cooperating or not cooperating with them.
Right. One thing I say too is, like, we talk about where God is in your life, to never have an understanding like, I need to convince him to come down to my level again, that he's with us before we sin, while we sin, and then after we sin. It's just like you said, before we sin, he's saying, don't do this thing that's not good for you. While we sin, we're not listening to him, but he's saying, you know, all sorts of things to us. I love you. Yeah. You know, I'm here with you. We're not listening. Then after we sin, he says, okay, do you see why I said that? But come back. Come back home. All right. You know, just offer yourself back to me and I'll receive you. He says that every time we sin.
Good for you.
The devil is the opposite, where before we do something unhelpful, he's like, do this. You can't be happy without it. What are you going to do if you don't do this? Everyone's going to think badly of you. You're going to be lonely. You're going to be afraid. You're going to, you know, be sad. And then after we sin, he says, you make me sick. How could you do this?
And Father Bauch, you will serve the students on this university amazingly well if you just help them see that condemnation, that shame, that great rejection isn't God.
Right.
There are so many people, so many young people, old people, believers wanting to be, who think that voice is God there. And so they sit in it, they lose a battle, and then drinking this in is where they lose the war.
Which is the only, really one of the few tragedies in the New Testament of Judas, where it's like,
yeah, good point.
Called by Christ, responds to him, fails, but that wasn't the worst. Betraying him wasn't the worst thing he did, right? Denied him.
Wouldn't it be great to preach on the solemnity of St. Judas
Iscariot? And he would have been.
I get mad at him every year that I don't get to give a rousing homily on the incredible work of Jesus by turning this betrayer into a saint. And that's what Jesus would have done.
And we get that fortunately with St. Peter.
Yeah.
on the Sea of Galilee, the shore, you know, when Peter, do you love me? That first kind of post-resurrection encounter, which is, you know, the sacrament of confession of going, ultimately that Peter needs to hear himself say, yes, Lord, you know that he needs to hear it three times.
That's right.
Right? He needs to be convinced that I did just about, I think my argument is that he did something worse than Judas because he was even a closer friend of Jesus.
Good
and
point.
At a friendship level,
interesting.
He says, I don't even know him. Could you imagine, what worse thing could a friend, in your hour of need, one of your best friends says, Jesus? Who? You know, Tom Richter? Who's that? I don't know him, right?
As I'm being beaten.
Yeah. And you've done everything for me, you know, and yeah. I don't know him. And yet, Peter is the head of the church afterwards, this great saint who we hold up as an example of Christian life.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day,
and it's,
Jesus offered him that.
And it's so easy for us to believe that's how God treats others.
Right. Yeah.
But when we're in the lived experience of it, this is when, and this reveals the power of that dark reality that comes into our thoughts. That for when you're talking about this other person, it's so beautiful, it's so inspiring, it's so true.
Yeah.
But when one is in the lived experience of the enemy speaking, it is a real battle,
yeah,
not to believe that is true.
Right. And I love the idea that, you know, Satan tells us 99% of the truth. It's if he says after you sin, oh, you really failed there, you're a failure, you can't do this on your own, you don't really love God. Like, there's actually quite a bit of truth in those statements, that by your actions you're saying that I don't love God, that you did fail.
Yeah.
But it's the difference between, and therefore,
that's who you are.
Now that's who you are, and you don't have a relationship with God that is able to be restored simply by going back to Him.
That's right.
Whereas God says, yeah, you failed. Yeah, you're weak. Right. Guess what? That's literally the reason why I came to earth. Like, this is exactly why I came down to earth in Bethlehem, why I was crucified, and why I established the church and give myself to you continually. This is why.
And that's why I'm pouring out to you right here, right now. Just tell me. Just tell me you need me to encourage you. Just tell me you need me. Just tell me. I think it pleases God so deeply when we beg Him for mercy, precisely when we feel like we deserve it the least. Right? That's the essence of the whole thing. And so those are just some major, right? What we're talking about now is just some major points of where you see the drama of these two voices in the human heart.
Yeah.
But to help young people come to understand what they need to reject, all the junk that's in them, that's condemning them. And then this other thing of helping them name what God is, the voice of God in spiritual consolation.
Yeah.
Let me end with this wonderful story. This is back when I was vocation director. And you know this young man, he's married now. Just the Lord led him out of the seminary into marriage. But he started coming to daily mass in the summer. Just showed up, 18 years old. Started coming to daily mass. And the parish I was living in. And after he came a week or two, I pulled him aside and said, hey, great to see you coming to daily mass. Can I be nosy and ask you, it's been about 2 weeks now, what's making you come? Why are you coming?
Yeah.
It's summer. You could be doing a dozen other things. This was, I found this profound. He said, well, Father, I went on the Rome pilgrimage, Catholic high school kid. And that was a really powerful experience. And we went to daily mass there, et cetera. And so I've just continued now. And he said, I don't know He said, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly why I'm coming, but I know when I come to Mass, I feel refreshed. For someone to help that young man name what the experience of the voice of God is like in him right now, the way he understands himself, is an experience of refreshment.
Yeah.
Now, that young man, if he wants to know what God wants of him and what God's doing and what's God saying to him and what God's drawing him to, etc., is right there in the space of refreshment. 6 hours later, when he gets in a crash with his dad's car, and the bottom falls out, and he's in this other... Just deal with your day, carry out your daily duty, but don't be asking questions in regards to relationship with God. So those sorts of things. What is it like? What is spiritual, in one word, what is spiritual consolation like in you? I try to get my students to name that.
Yeah.
And spiritual desolation, what name would you give that? That can be helpful, just nice sort of signposts.
Mm-hmm.
God, this is from God. Listen, receive, believe. This is not. Reject, resist, don't believe.